Welcome to Royally Screwed. My name is Chris Shearer, and it's my honor to take you on a tour through some of history's greatest, worst, and bizarre rulers. In this episode, we're talking about the Shinsengumi, a group of samurai who operated at the tail end of the shogunate period of Japan. Their existence helped ring in the final age of the samurai as the control of the government of Japan started being returned to the emperor instead of the shogun. The Shinsengumi worked for the shogun in Kyoto, but the entire political situation in Japan was really starting to get topsy-turvy, which we'll learn more about in the background history lesson. The group themselves were composed of many figures who still remain popular in Japanese consciousness to this day. If you've consumed any media from Japan, be it anime, video games, manga, movies, etc., you've probably come across at least one or two of these names that I'll mention in this episode. But that wasn't always the case, which I'll also get into at the end of the story. But that aside, the group was made up of many members, but I'm going to just mainly hone in on three different men, Serizawa Kamo, Kondo Isami, and Hijikata Toshizo. By following their stories, we'll be able to document the origins, rise, and subsequent brutal fall of the Shinsengumi. And all of this will happen within the span of about 6 years, so clearly there'll be plenty of quick-paced drama along the way. The story of the Shinsengumi is, at least in my opinion, the story of Japan's fight for its own survival, and it is the capstone to several centuries, if not more, of the island's history. So, without further ado, let's begin the story. We're going back in time to Japan in the mid-19th century in Samurai Self-Destruction Shinsengumi Story. In the background history lesson, we've got to do two things. One, explain the history and some of the nuances of samurai. Two, we've got to learn about the history of Japan. Well, maybe just the several decades or the century or so, building up to 1863 when the Shinsengumi were officially formed. So let's start with point number one, samurai. For the most part, I'm assuming everyone listening to this knows what a samurai is. They're just one of those stock character archetypes. Boiled down to its bare essence, Japanese warrior with a sword. While that technically is not wrong for some periods of history, it also misses the mark by a wide shot. In fact, the word samurai isn't even the best term to use for that mental image. In Japanese, the idea of a noble Japanese warrior who fights for honor with a sword would usually be referred to by the word bushi. If you know a bit more about samurai, maybe you've heard the term bushido, which is usually said to be the Japanese equivalent to the medieval European knight code of chivalry. Bushi also happened to be a social class in Japanese society, and a decently well-off social class at that. Well, if bushi is the correct term in Japanese, then where the heck does the word samurai come from? Despite being one of the most Japanese words to exist in the global consciousness, the term actually has its origins in Chinese. In Chinese, the character that is now used to say the Japanese word samurai meant something along the lines of to wait upon, in this case referring to the job of a servant. When the term first came about, a samurai was just someone in service to the Emperor of Japan and other high-ranking nobles. This meant that a samurai could be anyone from a butler to a police officer. As mentioned before, the armed warriors who worked in service of the emperor would have been referred to as bushi. The two terms became conflated during the rise of the Kamakura shogunate in 1192. Check out episode 8 of this show for that story. High-ranking land-holding bushi, also referred to as gokunin, started being referred to as samurai. The most powerful of the gokunin also had bushi working under them, but these bushi were not referred to as samurai. In the Sengoku period, which saw the collapse of the shogunate and the rise of feudal lords called daimyo, anyone who showed promise in battle could achieve the rank of samurai, meaning that the term started to lose its prestige. When the Tokugawa shogunate took power in the 17th century, the term samurai once more underwent some more fluctuations until it finally started to settle into the definition of a high-ranking bushi, aka where it had been under the Kamakura shogunate. Otherwise, the only thing to know is that samurai always served under a lord, be it the emperor, the shogun, or a daimyo. A samurai without a master was called a ronin. The samurai social class had amassed quite a bit of power over the centuries, and they had been known to turn the tides of fate when things got a bit too antsy. After all, that's how the emperor lost power to the first shogun to begin with. But let's move into more general Japanese history. In the 1630s, after decades of Western attempts to influence Japan, Shogun Tokugawa Ieyasu was ordered for the nation to essentially close its borders in favor of an isolationist policy. Commoners were more or less forbidden from leaving the nation, and trade was severely restricted. Almost everyone was forbidden from entering the country, except for the Chinese and the Dutch, who even then could really only trade in the city of Nagasaki. This policy, known as Sakoku, lasted for nearly 200 years. Then, in 1853, warships from the United States of America under the command of Commodore Matthew Perry, not the late actor from Friends, obviously, arrived on Japan's shores. Throughout the 1800s, America had increased trade with China and was already fishing in waters near Japan. Wishing to increase American commerce, President Millard Fillmore, don't worry, he's very much a guy you don't have to remember, and most Americans probably don't even remember him, ordered for a fleet under Commodore Perry to sail to Japan to convince them to change their minds on the Sakoku policy. Perry did this by pulling up into Tokyo Bay, then called Edo Bay, and firing his cannons. It was a full, truly and uniquely, American display of power. While initial conversations fell flat, a return voyage in 1854 proved more fruitful, and Japan reopened its borders for international trade. However, the Perry Expedition, as it's come to be known, showed Japan that cracks that had been forming in its internal policy were deepening. The Emperor of Japan, who had mainly just been a figurehead under the various shogunates, was against outside influence. It should also be noted that the current emperor, Emperor Komei, never met any foreigners during his entire life. Those loyal to Emperor Komei started rebelling against the powers of the shogunate for deciding on new international affairs without letting the emperor sign the treaties. He wouldn't have anyways, which is probably why the shogunate government, also called the Bakufu, didn't ask him to. With pro-emperor sentiments on the rise, mainly in the form of various rebellions, the Tokugawa shogunate decided it needed more protection, especially within the streets of its capital of Kyoto. And so they would form a group of samurai to police the city. It was finally time for the dawn of... Oh, wait a second. This script says the Roshigumi? That's right, the Shinsengumi won't be a thing just yet, but we'll learn how things get there soon. But to get there, we're first going to learn about Serizawa Kamo. Born to the Serizawa samurai family in September of 1826, his name at birth was actually Serizawa Genta. Despite his future of working for the shogunate, Kamo's family practiced the philosophy of Sono Joi, which roughly translates to revere the emperor and expel the barbarians. This philosophy came to Japan from the Chinese philosophy of Confucianism. Obviously, this sounds like, and very much was, a very nationalistic school of thought. However, by the time Kamo was being raised, Sono Joi had slightly changed its meaning. Now the revere the emperor section meant something more akin to praise the Tokugawa shogunate for keeping the imperial seat around, and expel the barbarians, meaning something closer to stop the spread of Christianity, considering the foreign influencers in this period were predominantly Christians who were sending missionaries. Japan had had its time with Christianity, which ended very badly for the Christians, and the religion was kind of viewed as antithetical to the traditional Japanese way of existence. Serizawa's family very much practiced this newer version of the philosophy. It would make it very awkward at family parties if they were anti-shogunate, considering the Serizawas were a branch of the Tokugawa family. As the son of a samurai, Kamo was also trained in swordsmanship. Unfortunately, this paired really horribly with his short temper and erratic behavior. This wasn't made any better when he grew older, considering Kama was also an alcoholic, his behavior becoming even worse when he was drunk. Perhaps then, in a bit of irony, Kamo married a woman named Kimura Umeko, whose father was the head of a Shinto temple. Serizawa became a priest and changed his name to Kimura Keiji. Unfortunately, this new religious life did not change Serizawa's violent behavior. In 1860, he joined the anti-foreigner terrorist group Tenguto. After Japan reopened its borders to the outside world, groups such as Tenguto began popping up everywhere as a sign of the shogunate's dwindling power in favor of the emperor. The organization gained infamy after their assassination of Ienosuke, who acted in a position similar to the prime minister for the shogun and also signed the Harris Treaty, which opened Japan's trading ports to America. Ie's death was essentially the first nail in the coffin of the Tokugawa shogunate. Serizawa rose through the ranks of Tenguto, which proved very troublesome for those below him. In 1861, he killed three of his subordinates after they broke some of the group's rules. Since he executed them without notice, Serizawa was imprisoned by the Tenguto. When the shogunate cracked down on the group, he was moved to a political prison but released the next year when the general political climate of Japan moved more in favor of the emperor. After his release, Serizawa changed his name from Kimura Keiji to Serizawa Kamo. He also joined the Roshigumi. Okay, so now that we've reached this point, who were the Roshigumi? Well, in 1862, a man named Kiyokawa Hachiro gathered over 200 ronin in order to create a peacekeeping organization for the shogun in Kyoto. The shogun agreed to this measure, but he was unaware that Kiyokawa's plan was actually to support the emperor with this new fighting force. Whether Serizawa was aware of this hidden nature is unknown. It would certainly make sense why a former political extremist would join the shogun protection squad. It's also entirely possible that his time in prison made Serizawa change ideologies back to supporting the shogun. In 1863, the Roshigumi met up in the city of Edo, the former name for Tokyo, and began marching towards Kyoto. Serizawa was the leader of one of the groups within the Roshigumi. There's a story that, along the way, one of the other commanders forgot his group existed and didn't make plans for Serizawa's lodgings. In a fit of rage, Serizawa set fire to some of the surrounding area outside of the lodge as an insult to Kondo Isami. Who was Kondo Isami? Well, let's find out. Kondo Isami, unlike Serizawa, was not born into a samurai family. He was born in 1834 to farmers near the present-day city of Chofu in the Greater Tokyo metropolitan area. His name at birth was Miyagawa Katsugoro. As a young man, he trained at the local dojo, which was teaching a new school of sword fighting called Tennin Rishin Ryu. Kondo caught the attention of his dojo's grandmaster when the young man stopped a group of bandits from breaking into his family's house. In 1849, Kondo was adopted by his grandmaster, Kondo Shusuke, and he was given the new name of Shimazaki Katsuta. By 1858, he was now using the name Shimazaki Isami. In 1860, Isami married into a family who served the Tokugawa family, bringing him closer to his future career. In September of 1861, he was named as the successor as grandmaster to the school of Tennin Rishin Ryu. When he took control, his name changed to Kondo Isami. Under his tutelage, Kondo taught and befriended many future members of the Shinsengumi. He was so successful in his endeavors that, in 1862, he was offered a position at the Kobusho, a military school created by the shogun to help Japan learn more Western styles of warfare. However, instead of taking a teaching position at the Kobusho, Kondo decided to join the Roshigumi. As I said before, in 1863, the Roshigumi met in Edo for a mission that would bring them to Kyoto. This mission was, as the Roshigumi proclaimed to be, protecting Shogun Iemochi as he was traveling to meet Emperor Komei. This meeting was historic, as the last time a shogun had been to Kyoto was over 200 years ago. Well, after one blazing bonfire set by Serizawa, the Roshigumi arrived in Kyoto. Once there, Kiyokawa revealed his loyalties to the Emperor and ordered the Roshigumi to march right on back to Edo. The members of the Roshigumi who were actually in it for loyalty to the Shogun stayed behind in Kyoto. Among their ranks were both Serizawa and Kondo. At the time, Kyoto was under the protection of the Aizu clan, whose samurai essentially acted as a police force. Since Serizawa's brother had connections with the Aizu clan, he suggested joining forces with the group in order to help protect the Shogun while he was in Kyoto. The Aizu clan agreed to this merger. The 20 remaining former Roshigumi members set up shop in the outlying town of Mibu. Since they were Ronin, the group was renamed the Miburo, meaning Ronin of Mibu, before that name was lengthened to Mibu Roshigumi. This new organization was divided into three groups. The first was led by Serizawa. The second was led by Kondo and contained many of his former students from the Tennin Rishin Ryu school. The third and smallest group was led by a man named Tonochi Yoshio. Tonochi's group seemed doomed from the start. In May of 1863, just 1 month after arriving in Kyoto, one of his members passed away from some form of illness. Over the next couple months, infighting within the Mibu Roshigumi resulted in Isami assassinating Tonochi. Serizawa forced another member to kill himself. The final member of Tenochi's group deserted and rejoined with the former Roshigumi in Edo, where they were now being called the Shinchogumi. But despite this rocky start, the Mibu Roshigumi were about to get some good news. A samurai named Matsudaira Katamori, who happened to be in charge of the military in Kyoto and was daimyo of the Aizu clan's territory, decided that these ronin needed an official sponsor within the shogun's government. Kyoto was rife with danger and the other Aizu samurai weren't doing enough. The shogun agreed with Matsudaira, who in turn became the group's sponsor. On the 18th of August 1863, Matsudaira renamed the Mibu Roshigumi the Shinsengumi. Following the restructuring into the Shinsengumi, the group was to be led by the conjoined forces of Serizawa, Kondo, and Niami Nishiki, who had previously served in Serizawa's group within the Mibu Roshigumi. The Shinsengumi were set out into the streets of Kyoto. They were highly visible due to what has now become a very iconic uniform, which was designed by Serizawa. Members would wear a kimono, usually in a neutral color. Over that, they would wear a hakama, which are long billowy pants that were mostly colored with dark blue or black and white stripes. But the most distinctive part was the haori, which is a jacket worn over a kimono. The haori of the Shinsengumi was a very bold, light blue color. This color is called asagi iro in Japanese. In the past, samurai who were about to commit seppuku, aka a ritual form of suicide involving disemboweling oneself, were said to wear a gown in this same color. Seppuku was viewed as a very honorable death, so this color was a symbol that, even should a member of the Shinsengumi die, it would be considered honorable. The sleeves of the haori were also trimmed with white triangles that resembled mountains, thus making the outfit stand out even more. But life was not easy for the Shinsengumi, especially with someone in charge like Serizawa. In July of 1863, so technically before they were called the Shinsengumi, the Aizu clan commanded the group to patrol the city of Osaka. While there, Serizawa and several others of the then Mibu Roshigumi got drunk and started a fight against a group of sumo wrestlers. Despite there being only 10 ronin and 30 sumos, Serizawa and his group suffered no injuries, but 10 sumo wrestlers had been killed. A month later, he destroyed a restaurant after getting drunk and rowdy in the city of Shimabara. Fast forward to September, when they were now officially the Shinsengumi, Serizawa and some of his men destroyed a silk store with a cannon. Yes, a cannon. This cannon had been given to the Shinsengumi by the Aizu to protect Kyoto, and Serizawa used it to blow up a store in broad daylight. Unbelievable. Obviously, the Shinsengumi could not continue to operate like this. There was beginning to be an increasing divide between the Shinsengumi loyalty to Serizawa and the Shinsengumi loyal to Kondo. On the 19th of October, Kondo's faction started making its moves. Niumi Nishiki, who was loyal to Serizawa but had also been recently demoted to vice commander, was ordered to commit seppuku by Kondo's men. From there, a plan was put into motion to get rid of Serizawa. It's not entirely known why the co-commander of the Shinsengumi would go on to be assassinated. The prevailing theory is that he was too destructive for the group, so he needed to go. The other theory mainly tossed around is that Kondo and his crew had only kept Serizawa around in order to get close to the Aizu clan. Now that Matsudaira was sponsoring the Shinsengumi, Serizawa was no longer needed. Whatever the truth was, on the 30th of October 1863, the Shinsengumi held a drinking party. Serizawa left with a woman and one of the men loyal to him. A second group of Shinsengumi, led by a man named Hijikata Toshizo, followed Serizawa to the house he was staying in for the night and killed him, the woman he was with, and the other member of the Shinsengumi. This shakeup left Kondo, who had left his hands clean of Serizawa's blood, as sole commander of the Shinsengumi, and his vice commander was to be Hijikata Toshizo. Alright, let's rewind the clock one last time to learn about Hijikata Toshizo. He was born in May 1835 to a farming family in what is now the city of Hino in the Tokyo metropolitan area. His father died only a few months before his birth, and most of the rest of his family was out of the picture by the time he was 6 years old. Therefore, Hijikata was raised by his older brother and sister-in-law. Though he was mostly self-taught in swordplay, one of Hijikata's brothers-in-law owned a dojo that taught the Tennin Rishin Ryu style of sword fighting. Hijikata eventually joined the dojo, and later he was able to meet Kondo Isami. In 1859, Hijikata was enrolled in Kondo's dojo. Stories usually claim that he was never able to master the Tennin Rishin Ryu style, but he later used what he had learned to train Shinsengumi members in what is now called the Shinsengumi Kenjutsu style of sword fighting. Around 1863, his oldest brother attempted to have Hijikata married off, but Toshizo had already decided to join the Roshigumi. He promised that, upon his return, he would get married. He kept this promise for 2 years until he realized his commitment to the Shinsengumi would never allow him to return. Hijikata would never get married, still somewhat keeping his promise to his brother and Akoto, the woman who was to be his fiancé. Obviously, it was Kondo's influence that led Hijikata to join the Roshigumi, and then stick around through its transformation into the Shinsengumi. As one of Kondo's closest confidants, he served as deputy commander for that division of the group. It was also Hijikata who started enacting the policies that would lead to the expulsion and death of Serizawa's unit. After uncovering evidence of his cruel and disorderly conduct, it was Hijikata who ordered Niumi Nishiki to commit seppuku. And as mentioned before, he also led the group that assassinated Serizawa Kamo. Under a more unified leadership, the Shinsengumi were ready to enter into a new era. And that era began with an explosive episode. In the late era of the Tokugawa shogunate, political dissenters were referred to as shishi. While this is traditionally used to refer to pro-imperial dissenters, it can also be used to refer to pro-shogunate forces and assassins. As the shogunate's forces in Kyoto, it was the Shinsengumi's goal to take down the Shishi operating in the city. The main groups allied with the emperor in Kyoto were the Choso, Tosa, and Higo clans. The Shishi from these clans were mostly ronin, operating essentially as street gangs. But the main base of operations for these clans was the Ikedaya Inn. In mid-1864, the Shinsengumi arrested a Shishi named Furutaka Shuntaro. According to traditional histories of the ensuing incident, Hijikata was in charge of the interrogation against Furutaka. The stories paint a horrific time that involved brutal torture that I've never heard of before and hope to never see examples of. It's hard to say whether these stories are true or just anti-Shinsengumi propaganda, because I'm pretty sure Furutaka would have died from this, or at least would have been unable to provide Hijikata with the information he eventually divulged. Furutaka told the Shinsengumi that the Imperial Loyalists were planning on burning the city of Kyoto and capture Matsudaira, the sponsor of the Shinsengumi. In response to Furutaka's arrest, the other Shishi he operated with met up at the Ikedaya Inn to discuss, well, something. Some say it was to further their plans of chaos, while others say it was simply to free Furutaka. On the night of the 9th of July, 1864, the Shinsengumi launched a raid on the Ikedaya Inn. The Shinsengumi had grown significantly since their formation, but only 34 members, divided into two groups, attacked the inn. The first group of just 10 men were led by Kondo. According to Kondo's later writings, the fighting began at 10 p.m. and lasted for 2 hours. After this initial raid, 24 men, led by Hijikata, joined in to finish the fight and arrest the dissidents. Of the 40 Shishi in the inn, 8 were killed and 23 were arrested, the remaining men able to escape out the back of the inn. Only one Shinsengumi member was killed in the raid, with 2 more succumbing to injuries over the next few days. The Ikedaya incident truly ushered in the new age of the Shinsengumi as Kyoto's premier police force. The swift and efficient attack terrified the pro-imperial community of the imperial capital. As a reward, the Shinsengumi received 600 ryo, part of the currency of Japan before the introduction of the yen, with a single ryo equaling about the amount of wealth needed to supply one person with enough rice for a year. The incident also marked a turning point in Japan's history. Depending on which side of history you read, the Shinsengumi either helped delay the fall of the shogunate or brought its demise closer. No matter which may have been true, the Shishi responded to the Ikedaya incident with another attack. A month later, in late August, they attempted to break into the Imperial Palace in order to restore the Emperor to full power over all of Japan. They were stopped once again by the Shinsengumi. And this time around, the Shishi actually did set fire to Kyoto. This event, called the Kinmon Incident, resulted in the shogun ordering for an armed assault against pro-imperial forces, which led to many Shishi being put to death at the end of 1864. Oh, and by the way, if you were to go to the site of the Ikedaya Inn today, you'd find a restaurant called Ikedaya Hana no Mai, which is themed after the Shinsengumi. In late August of 1866, Shogun Iemochi died, and his son Yoshinobu took over as the 15th leader of the Tokugawa shogunate. Yoshinobu hoped to further westernize his nation, which led to increased strain on the political crisis Japan was facing. He also sought to further centralize the power of the shogun, hoping to win the tug-of-war contest between the shogun and the emperor. Well, just 4 months after Yoshinobu became shogun, Emperor Kome died, and his son, Mutsuhito, also called Emperor Meiji, took control, though he was only 14 years old at this time. The Shishi, mainly the Choso, Tosa, and Satsuma clans, did everything in their power to make life difficult for Yoshinobu while rallying behind Emperor Meiji, seeking to bring the teenage emperor under their control. Eventually, the writing on the walls became clear, and in late 1867, Yoshinobu seemingly reached an agreement with the pro-imperial forces. He would step down as leader of the military government, and a new legislative body, modeled after the British Parliament, would be put in place to help the emperor. Yoshinobu would be able to maintain the title of shogun, but he would have far less power. When some of the Shishi found out that Yoshinobu would probably be the head of this new legislative body, they stepped in to see him fully removed from the government. So, on the 7th of November, 1867, Yoshinobu sent his resignation to Emperor Meiji, thereby dismantling the Bakufu and making him the last shogun of Japan. For the first time in centuries, rule over all of the nation fell back into the hands of the emperor. Unfortunately, anti-imperial sentiments were still heavy throughout the nation. Yoshinobu left Kyoto and the Shinsengumi followed suit to Osaka Castle. But as it became clear that forces were working to completely destroy any ounce of power the Tokugawa clan might have retained under the emperor, the former shogun decided he would not go quietly into that good night. On the 17th of January 1868, Yoshinobu called for a revolt against the Choshu and Satsuma clans, wishing to free Emperor Meiji from their influence. 10 days later, an anti-imperial army, including the 300-plus members of the Shinsengumi, marched from Osaka to Kyoto. The following battle, called the Battle of Tobofushimi, proved to be a disaster for the deteriorating Bakufu, despite the fact that they outnumbered Meiji's army 3-1. This would be the first battle in the larger Boshin War, also called the Japanese Civil War. In the battle, Kondo was shot and was forced to retreat. He was taken back to Edo for medical assistance. While there, he was promoted to the rank of Wakadoshiyori, which is a very high-ranking position within the shogun's government. While recovering, Kondo also decided to reorganize the Shinsengumi for the wartime effort. They would now be called the Koyo Chinbutai, the Pacification Corps. In late March, the new Koyo Chinbutai went to battle against the Imperial Army at the Battle of Koshu Katsunuma. The former Shinsengumi were outnumbered nearly 10-1 and were forced to retreat after 2 hours. 179 members of the shogunate died, including about 30 members of the Koyo Chinbutai. In the aftermath of another devastating loss, some of the former Shinsengumi split from the group to form a different group called the Seihetai. In mid-April, the Koyo Chinbutai left Edo to find a new headquarters to operate out of. A couple weeks later, they settled upon the not-too-far-away city of Nagareyama. Unfortunately, their location was immediately discovered by pro-imperial forces. Despite using a pseudonym to protect his identity, Kondo was recognized by members of the Satsuma clan. On the 26th of April, imperial forces surprised the former Shinsengumi and took Kondo as a hostage. Several days later, Kondo was put on trial for the alleged assassination of a man named Sakamoto Ryoma. Sakamoto was a pro-imperial shishi that had favored moderate westernization and a democratic form of government similar to that found in America. Kondo had not been involved in this assassination, but that didn't stop the pro-imperial forces from proclaiming him guilty. On the 17th of May, 1868, Kondo Isami was beheaded. His nephew recovered the body and had it buried in Edo. Kondo's head was preserved in salt and briefly held on a pike outside of Kyoto before it was stolen by a Shinsengumi member named Hajime Saito. Saito brought the head to a priest who made sure it was given a proper burial. The Shinsengumi was down its leader. And things would only get worse from there. Though Hijikata was now technically the leader of the Koyo Chinbutai, the group would split in half again, though this time out of necessity. Hijikata was injured in May, but the group still needed a leader for battle, so Hajime Saito was chosen to lead the group until the new commander was healed up. During this time, Hijikata helped erect a memorial in honor of Kondo Isami. After two further defeats for the anti-imperial forces, Hijikata and the remaining Shinsengumi retreated further north. It was during this time, when Hijikata remained in the city of Sendai, that he told Tokugawa Yoshinobu's physician that he knew there was no way that the shogunate forces could ever win this war. However, as a man of honor, he would fight like hell for the Tokugawas, even if he knew it would result in his death. In October of 1868, the Shinsengumi traveled further north to the island of Hokkaido, then called Ezo. Pro-shogunate forces would come to take control of the island and proclaimed it a separate republic from the Empire of Japan in January of the following year. Hijikata was named vice commander of the army for the Republic of Ezo, and the Shinsengumi operated out of a fortress called Goryokaku in the city of Hakodate. For the next few months, he continued to lead the Shinsengumi and shogunate forces against the empire. There would be victories and failures. Mostly failures. But Hijikata still continued. True to his word, he would either see victory for the Tokugawas or go down with the ship. On the 14th of June, 1869, Hijikata called one of his personal assistants to the hotel room he was staying at. He gave the teenage boy his katana, strands of his hair, a photograph of himself, a letter, and his death poem, a classical part of samurai culture to symbolize the wisdom of these warriors. The death poem read, "Though my body may decay on the island of Aizo, my spirit guards my lord in the east." Hijikata told his attendant to deliver these items to his brother-in-law in the hopes that, if he died soon, there would be something to remember him by. Sure enough, 6 days later, Hijikata was leading his troops into battle when he was shot in the lower back, killing him. It's unknown where he was buried, but one of the spots proposed is Goryokaku Fortress in Hakodate. 3 days after his death, the Shinsengumi forces surrendered to the Empire, and the organization was dismantled. 1 week after Hijikata's death, on the 20th of June, 1869, the Republic of Aizo surrendered to Emperor Meiji's army. The Boshin War had come to an end, and the era of the Shogun and the Shinsengumi had reached its conclusion. In 1876, several surviving members of the Shinsengumi, along with a couple members of the Republic of Aizo, erected a monument to their fallen comrades in the Itabashi Ward of Tokyo. This monument, called the Grave of Shinsengumi, still remains standing to this day. During the reign of Emperor Meiji and his successor, Emperor Taisho, the Shinsengumi were viewed as a failed organization who rebelled against the true power of Japan. Emperor Meiji's reforms, which saw almost every single part of Japan's structure changed, were viewed in a very positive light, so it made sense that those who opposed him were looked down upon. Ironically enough, considering the views of Meiji's father, the new emperor's reign would see Japan rapidly westernize and industrialize its culture. It also resulted in a super strong empire that began reaching its arms beyond the boundaries of Japan's modern borders, which would ultimately result in the Empire of Japan becoming the monster it was during World War II. The Shinsengumi finally got a new lease on life when Japanese novelist Kan Shimozawa interviewed several former Shinsengumi members and organized the interviews into his book Shinsengumi Shimatsuki, which was released in 1928. This book caused public opinion on the organization to start shifting directions. After World War II, in which all of Japan had to sort of do a big introspective look, the Shinsengumi were finally recognized as a strong group of samurai. In 1964, author Ryotaro Shiba's book Moeyoken, which was all about Hijikata, helped cement the Shinsengumi in the public sphere, and they have remained a part of Japanese pop culture ever since. There are many names that I could have mentioned in this episode that I didn't, considering there were hundreds of men in the Shinsengumi. I do want to call out one though, and that is Okita Soji. He's perhaps, at least in my opinion, the most famous of the Shinsengumi members. It's just that he never led them, so I couldn't really talk about the guy. He passed away from tuberculosis the day before the Shinsengumi surrendered. His brief but brilliant life has made him the poster child for late samurai era narratives. Also, like early Peter Pan live-action depictions, it was not uncommon for him to be played by female actors for quite some time. And speaking of samurai in general, the Boshin War spelled out the end of their existence. In 1870, there were nearly 2 million citizens in Japan who were considered part of the samurai social class. Under Meiji's reforms, the samurai class was made obsolete. After a failed attempt at a rebellion in 1877 was made to restore the samurai class, the former warrior system collapsed. The older samurai decided to simply live out the rest of their lives. The younger former samurai decided to study abroad, where they learned all about business. By the 1920s, about 35% of prominent businessmen in Japan were members of the former samurai social class. Not bad for a group made obsolete. But for now, that's it for this week's episode of Royally Screwed. I hope you enjoyed the journey. Be sure to subscribe to the show and tell a friend all about it. Next time, we're going just slightly further back in time, but moving over to India to talk about another figure of revolutionary history. The British East India Company ruled over, well, India, and, unsurprisingly, the local Indian population didn't really like that. So, we're going to look at the life of one of the figures who led an uprising that would see India's fate change forever. It's the story of Lakshmi Bai, the queen of the Indian state of Jhansi. I hope you'll join me then for another topsy-turvy look into history's most interesting rulers.